So in this course, we'll cover three main topics. So in the first part of the course, which I'll teach this month, we will discuss instantons. And anomalies. And then starting next month, you'll study conformal field theory. With Jaume. So instantons are non-trivial saddle points. Or solutions of the Euclidean equations of motion. So non-trivial saddle points of the Euclidean functional integral. And they're important because they're non-perturbative effects, and they let us study situations in which the perturbation theory that we've studied in the last two courses fail. So they're relevant for things like tunneling or the splitting of energy of degenerate states, effects that you cannot find using perturbation theory.
Can you remind me what makes a saddle point non-trivial?
Yes. So. A trivial saddle point has zero action. So what I'm calling a non-trivial saddle point is a saddle point that has finite non-zero action.
But the action is defined up to a constant, right? Even in the path integral, that constant would look like a constant of the, you can take it outside of the
Yes, there is some a question about what I mean by the zero action. So after that shift, and what I mean by zero action is I'm choosing that constant so that the classical ground state is a zero action configuration. So we'll adjust that constant to make that true. So this month, there are six lectures, and they'll be divided roughly evenly between instantons and anomalies. So three or three and a half lectures on instantons and two and a half or three on anomalies. And anomalies are quantum effects that spoil classical symmetries. So up until this point, in the QFT 1 and 2 courses, we've made frequent reference and use of symmetries. Symmetries make many calculations easier. They have important physical consequences. And so far, our study of symmetries has just been at the classical level. We've studied the action or Lagrangian at the classical level, and if we saw that there was an invariance, we said there was a symmetry. But everything, even though sometimes we have used symmetries to make statements about the quantum theory, so far we have not really done a proper quantum mechanical study of symmetries. And sometimes a symmetry an apparent symmetry that looks like a symmetry if you just study the classical theory is not actually a symmetry of the quantum theory. And in that case, the symmetry is said to be anomalous. And later this month, we will identify situations in which identify a procedure by which we can determine when a symmetry is anomalous and what physical effects those anomalies can have. So that can lead to interesting observable consequences. Okay, but more on anomalies later. And then, as I mentioned before, Jaume will tell you something about quantum field theory beginning next month. Okay, so for now, we'll study instantons. And so I just would like to elaborate a bit more about why we expect something like instantons to play a role in physics and when they are typically important. So in QFT1 and QFT2, we developed several different procedures for studying quantum field theories perturbatively. And in general, we were interested in computing some quantity of interest. This could be a correlation function. It could be a scattering amplitude. It could be a cross-section, precisely what we're interested in calculating won't be so important for what I'm about to say. We're interested in some quantity of interest, which I'll call F, which depends on some small parameter, G, which could be coupling constant or could be H bar, using a semi-classical approximation. So F here is our exact quantity of interest. And G is our small parameter. And basically, every single result we've found in QFT courses so far have been in the form of asymptotic series. So all of our results were of the form asymptotic series valid as G goes to 0, or in some cases, 1 over G. And so they're asymptotic series. And the reason they're asymptotic series instead of convergent series is typically related to, at some point in our calculation, we'll have to swap to sum in the integral. So this is related to swapping sums and integrals. And in general, if you take a conditionally convergent sum and you change the order in which you're adding up the terms, you don't always get a convergent sum. And in basically every case we've studied so far, we won't. So whatever we're trying to calculate, using perturbation theory, the best we can usually hope for is a asymptotic series. And so asymptotic series, while they contain much useful information about the quantity we're interested in studying, they don't contain all the information. So in particular, if if I change F by, I could add a term over here, like e to the minus a over g, and the asymptotic series would be exactly the same, because this function is what's called a non-perturbative function. So e to the minus a over g is much less than g to the n for all n as g goes to 0. So we could never hope to find an effect that depended on our expansion parameter in a way of something like e to the minus a over g or e to the minus a over g squared using perturbation theory. And so these are invisible in perturbation theory. And they're sometimes important. In fact, sometimes these terms are the leading effects. There are cases where you can compute a quantity of interest, for example, a tunneling rate, And all of the terms in the perturbative series will be zero. So leading contribution will be a non-perturbative function like e to the minus a over g. So two examples you might be familiar with from quantum mechanics. So one is if you're interested in tunneling through a barrier, the transmission coefficient is typically goes like 2 over h bar integral square root of 2 m d minus e dx. So this is the transmission coefficient. And another example you might be familiar with is the energy splitting of the two lowest energy levels in a symmetric double well potential. So in this case, the energy splitting goes like e to the minus 1 over h bar. Almost the same formula, but just 2v instead of v minus e. So these are the energies of the two lowest states. So in both cases, these effects are exponentially small. And in both cases, I just wrote that these quantities of interest, the transmission coefficient or the energy splitting, is proportional to an exponential factor like this. Of course, if I put a constant in front of a term e to the minus a over g, that's still invisible in perturbation theory. And in general, there could be some coefficient in front. Determining the coefficient is usually significantly more difficult than just determining the exponential dependence. And sometimes it's not even that important to do. After all, if we're computing something with units, this constant in front determines the units. This is a units multiplying something that is exponentially small. And if the exponent is moderately large, sometimes it doesn't even matter what units you put in front. After all, you take the ratio of the largest size in the relevant length scale in the universe, the Hubble length, the Planck length, that's only like e to the 140. So you don't need that large of an exponent before the units are entirely irrelevant, and you can choose any units you like. I will make a few comments about how you could determine the coefficient in front, but for the most part, we're just going to focus on determining the exponential behavior, which in many cases is the most interesting part. Okay, so if you have computed either of these exponentially small effects in a previous quantum mechanics course, the way you probably did it was using some technique that involved finding the wave function, such as the WKB approximation. And well, that's the easiest way to do these calculations in quantum mechanics. It doesn't generalize very well to quantum field theory. And that's because if we wanted to do a generalization of these calculations in quantum field theory using a generalization of the WKB approximation, what we would have to do is find the wave functional. So some wave functional that depended on our field configuration. Say we're doing a scalar field theory, it would be a wave functional that depended on the value of the field at each point in space-time. And just like solving, so to find the wave function, we'd have to solve the Schrodinger equation. Solving the Schrodinger equation becomes more difficult the higher the dimension we're in. And if we wanted to do this in QFT, find the wave functional, it's basically like taking the infinite dimensional limit of quantum mechanics. In some cases, it's possible if you have a lot of symmetry, but in general, this is hard. So we need this. So there is another technique that works both in quantum mechanics. It turns out to be more difficult than the techniques you may have seen already for the quantum mechanics problem. But the advantage of this other technique, the instant time technique that I'm about to describe, is that it generalizes much more easily to quantum field theory. Using instantons to study quantum field theory is not that much harder than using instantons to study quantum mechanics. So instantons are easier.
Or why we would like to have this new term, this exponent term?
Sometimes it's a leading effect. So in that case, if all of these a sub n's are zero, so this. Maybe I should add this to the other side of the equation. Better way to write this. So if we're interested in computing this, and all of these terms are zero, well, there could have been a term like this over here that we missed. And so if all of these terms are zero, then this is the most important thing. And that's the case we'll focus on for most of the course, is where the perturbation series is just identically zero. So if we were going to, suppose we were going to study the ground state energy in this potential, we just did perturbation theory. We'd be looking at what the potential looks like around each of the minima. And this minima doesn't know anything about this minima. We have to go a finite distance away. If we just do perturbation theory around this minima, we're never going to be able to see this effect that the ground state energy is degenerate. Classically degenerate ground states are split quantum mechanically. And if you do the calculation, you can find the splitting and find it. In fact, it's exponentially small. There's no term that's like h bar to the n. It's just this exponentially small term, invisible in perturbation theory. So that's the most common case in which we're interested in these exponentially small effects. But it's also sometimes interesting if you're trying to compute something to very high accuracy. Asymptotic series, of course, are good approximations with a sufficiently small number of terms. But if you want to go compute something to higher accuracy, these terms can become important as well.
Some expansion around small q?
You could. Okay. Just the most common examples you get are e to the minus 1 over g or 1 over g squared. at least as a leading term. You can, so there could be other things. Okay. So just to sketch the rough idea of what we're trying to do in the instanton method, I want to return to a integral that we studied in the Math for QFT course back in the front end. So there we were studying integrals, contour integrals of this form. And what we found when we used the saddle point approximation was that we could approximate this integral in the limit that z to infinity as a sum over the relevant saddles. So I'll call W naught square root of 2 pi over z e to the z f W naught square root minus f double prime. And so what we're going to do over the next few lectures is try to generalize this to first quantum mechanics and then quantum field theory. So here, z is like 1 over g. So it's our, in Math for QFT, it was a little easier to work with a large expansion parameter instead of a small one. We can always just take 1 over z. And the way we approximated this integral was we said that when z is very large, this integrand is only large when f is small. And so if we deform this contour into a contour that passes through saddle points where f prime is 0, we can just say that the integrand is only large in regions near the saddle points. And near a saddle point, in general, an integral of this form will look like a Gaussian integral. And so we can approximate this as the sum of a bunch of Gaussian integrals. And that's where we get each of these terms from each of the saddle points. And so what we're going to try to do is, at least in a limited sense, generalize this to quantum mechanics and quantum field theory. So there are still open questions about how to do this in the most general case. So we're going to look at a method that works, at least in some situations. But if you remember, from the front end, one thing we had to do was determine which contour we could deform this to so that the phase of phi was constant so that our approximation worked and we didn't have destructive interference. And that allowed us to determine which saddles were relevant. These relevant saddles were not necessarily just the saddle points on the original contour. How to do that in general? In quantum mechanics or quantum field theory is a hard question, and it's an open research problem. For example, it's something that Neil Turek has worked on recently. Not knowing how to do that completely, but in some cases, we can essentially do this procedure. So what we're going to try to do is start with a path or functional integral expression for the quantity we're interested in computing. And then we're going to find the saddles or the solutions to the equations of motion. And if we find a non-trivial saddle, a solution to the equations of motion that has non-zero action, that's going to give us a exponentially small contribution to the quantity we're interested in computing. So at a very high level, that's what we're going to try to do, is just generalize this saddle point equation. And so the method we're going to use works for studying the ground state energy, or the ground state in particular. We can use the instanton method. Okay. So that's going to take us about 3 lectures to do. And where we're going in the next 3 lectures in somewhat more detail is, first, we will develop this technique in one-dimensional quantum mechanics. And actually, most of the work will be done for us in this case. So generalizing this method to quantum field theory will be fairly straightforward once we understand how it works in quantum mechanics. And as you'll see, this is a more complicated method of solving either of these two problems from the ones you've seen before. And what we'll be focusing on is computing the ground state energy from the Euclidean functional integral. And we'll look at several different pieces of physics we can learn from the ground state energy. And the potentials we'll study will be chosen so that they generalize most immediately to the interesting quantum field theory cases. And then, starting maybe at the end of Friday's lecture, or second half of Friday's lecture, we will look at a few applications of instantons in quantum field theory. In particular, we'll study the decay of a metastable state. In QFT. And this has applications in many areas of physics, from cosmology to condensed matter, for phase transitions. And we will also study the theta vacua, or the ground state of Yang-Mills theory. Has an interesting structure, and there's an interesting story that I'll have more to say about next week.
Is that a big theta or a small theta?
A small theta.
Sorry.
Are there other questions or comments on what the method we're going to develop, the idea behind it? Or where we're going?
So are you saying that it is hard to reproduce the studies? I just don't know. Is it?
What part?
These ones are also saddle points, so are they the same mechanism?
It's the same idea in a limited context. So in the general, in a general problem, you would want to try to determine this contour.
Yes.
Precisely. Instanton method doesn't have a lot to say about this contour, but it's when applied to the ground state, at least in many situations, there's other checks you can do. Sometimes you can compute the same thing using other methods. So we have some evidence that this method gives us the right answer, at least in this case. There's classes of problems where the instanton method is not applicable. where we would expect this idea to still work, but the challenging part of implementing, or at least one of the challenging parts of implementing, is determining the correct contours and which saddles are relevant. So that's in many cases an open problem. There's a few examples where it can be done explicitly, but not very many.
I also have a question. Okay. So is it I the action?
Oh, this is just using the notation from math for QFT.
You are saying that set instance are non-trivial set of points.
Yes. So
it seems that every set of points are non-trivial.
So in the analogy we're going to use, this is like the coupling constant, or 1 over the coupling constant.
Yeah.
G is like 1 over the coupling constant. This is going to be an amplitude.
Oh, I see.
And F here is going to be the action. Okay, so what we're going to try to compute is the ground state energy from Euclidean path integral. So let's suppose we have a path integral or amplitude we're interested in computing in Euclidean time. We're just computing the amplitude to go from some initial position to some final position. You can write this as a path integral, as integral from I'm going to choose my boundary condition so that our initial time is at -t/2 and our final time is at t/2. So we have boundary conditions for our path integral, and we integrate over all x, all trajectories, out e to the -1/h-bar, is the Euclidean action of x. So this path integral is something we can use the saddle point approximation to try to compute. And it also contains information about the ground state energy, which we can use to answer a number of different interesting physical questions. So to see that if we compute this path integral, at least approximately, we can recover information about the ground state energy, we can insert a complete set of states. So if we insert a complete set of states here, z becomes sum of e to the minus e n t over h bar x f n x I, where these n are the energy eigenstates, so h n is En. And if we want to recover the ground state energy from Z, we just need to take the limit as t goes to infinity h bar over t log of z. So the ground state energy is the one, is the term that will decay the most slowly. So in the limit that t goes to infinity, only the ground state energy, or the ground state energy term, will be infinitely larger than any of the other terms. So this, taking this limit and getting rid of these extraneous factors, picks out the ground state energy, at least if we normalize our path integral correctly. So this is, if we can compute a path integral like this, we can determine the ground state energy, which will let us compute energy splittings. We could, the next, the term that decays the second slowest will be the first excited state, so we can generalize this to compute energy splittings, which is one of the things we'll be interested in doing. And the other thing we can learn from the ground state energy, or more precisely, the resonant lowest resonant energy state, is the decay rate. So if we're interested in studying an unstable potential, it looks something like this. Well, one question we could ask is what the decay rate of a particle that is initially localized near x equals 0 is to large positive values of x. And so we know that the particle here will eventually tunnel through this barrier and go off to infinity. Well, you might be concerned about talking about the ground state energy of this potential, because it is unbounded from below. Doesn't make a whole lot of sense to talk about the ground state energy, but in a sense, we still can, because even though this potential doesn't have bound states, it still does have resonant states, which have an outgoing wave function only. So by imposing the proper boundary conditions, we can compute the complex energies of the resonant states. And it can be shown that the decay rate is just the imaginary part of the, I'm still going to call it the ground state energy, even though it's something slightly different, of the lowest, the ground state energy, or the lowest resonant state energy. So I'm not going to fully derive this formula, but this makes sense. So if we start with a state where the particle is near x equals 0, or in the state that is the ground, what we define for the wave function, if we just looked at a small region around x equals 0, some of the wave function is essentially going to leak through the barrier. So if we ask what's the probability that the particle stays near x equals 0 sometime later, it's going to be exponentially decaying because of the leak through the barrier. And if we time evolve that state, you expect the time evolution to go to like e to the e naught t. And so if e has some imaginary part, that will account for that leak at e to the I e naught t. So that will account for the decaying probability for a particle to remain near x equals 0.
we're going to prove that?
We're not going to prove that. But the motivation is that, like, so the probability goes like e to the minus I e naught t over h bar. So if this has, what's the two? So if this has some imaginary part, there'll be some decay. So the ground state energy contains the information we need to check, to compare our results with the exponentially small quantities you may have computed using the WKB approximation form. Okay. And so what we're going to do is we're going to compute this path integral using the saddle point approximation. And so the saddle point approximation, we need to find the saddles of this of the action. In other words, so the instanton or saddle point, which I'll call x bar of tau, satisfies the Euclidean equation of motion. Which is the variation of the action is zero. Or if we assume that our action, well, for the simplest case, we can assume that our action is just the integral of x dot of tau squared plus some potential. V of x of tau. So I'm setting the mass mass to one. It's not going to play that important of a role. And in this case, our equation of motion is just t squared x bar tau squared plus v prime of x bar, where v prime means the derivative of v with respect to x. We can also include the effect of fluctuations of the path away from the saddle point, just like we did in QFT2 when we computed using the saddle point approximation the effect of action. So at leading order in h bar, the effect of action is just the same as the classical action. But we can include fluctuations, and we did that in detail. And we found that there was a determinant term, or if you put it in the action, a trace log term. And so the same sort of reasoning applies here. I'm not going to spend a lot of time discussing the fluctuation term, but you can apply the same procedures that we used in QFT2 to compute that. So using the saddle point approximation, the path integral I'm interested in computing is just some normalization the determinant of S double prime to minus a half and e to the minus Euclidean action evaluated at the instanton configuration. So if we don't care so much about the prefactor, in many cases we don't, then the main task of applying the instanton method is to determine what are the solutions to the Euclidean equation of motion and what are their actions. So if we just have a single instanton, we'd use this formula. If we have multiple different instantons, we should include the contributions from all of them.
By multiplying them or?
Summing. So we could sum over the being careful to remember that. So here we've just, this is including the saddle point approximation. We expand S as a Taylor series. So this formula is valid up to second order. So at some point, the third or higher order terms will be may become important, and instantons with large action may be less important than those. Okay, so let's try to apply this method. And one of the simplest problems we can apply this method to is the double well potential. And what we're trying to compute is this energy splitting between the two lowest energy states. Classically, they're degenerate. Quantum mechanically, the degeneracy is broken. And so we'll consider a potential the same form as the one I sketched up there. Need a few more parameters, so I'm going to draw it again. So here's v of x, and here is x. And I'm going to assume that the minima are at a and minus a, and that the second derivative at a and minus a is omega squared. And this is symmetric. V of x is V of minus x.
I'm sorry, I'm not understanding what are we calculating? The energy splitting between what?
So classically, there would be two zero energy states here where the particle just sits at a or at minus a. Quantum mechanically, those states are not energy eigenstates. Energy eigenstates will be basically even and odd linear combinations of those states. And they'll have an exponentially small difference in the energy between the even and odd combinations of the states localized around each of the. Which is, if you compute it by finding the wave function and explicitly finding those lowest energy states, you can show that it's this. We're going to get the same results without ever mentioning the wave function, which is useful because in QFT, finding the wave function is very hard. Okay, so first question is, which path integral should we compute? So we saw over here that we could compute the ground state energy from any path integral. By any path integral, I mean any choice of xi and xf. So xi and xf don't show up in our formula for the ground state energy. So it seems like a priori we could choose anything we like for xi and xf. Nevertheless, there are several good choices, several reasonable choices. So I'm going to make the choice that xf is A. And xi is minus A. And the reason I'm making these choices instead of, for example, so another choice I could make is I could choose, it might at first glance seem simpler, is I could choose xf and xi to be 0. That's a simple choice. The problem with that choice, there's one obvious solution to the Euclidean equations of motion if xi and fx are 0, which is just that x is equal to 0 for all time. But that solution won't have finite action in the t goes to infinity limit. So this term will be 0. The kinetic term is not there. But this potential term will just be a positive constant. So if I chose xi and xf both to be 0, our saddle point solution, our solution to the Euclidean equations of motion, would have infinite action. An infinite action term doesn't contribute at all. This, if we plug in s is infinity, that just gives us 0. So those are not, it's not an interesting configuration. On the other hand, if I choose the particle to start and end at some combination of plus or minus a, then if the particle is moving very slowly and near plus or minus a as t gets large, then the contribution to the action from large t will be small. And so we have a hope of having a finite action. Is there a question?
Yeah, it was about this. We supposed t large to say that the action is infinite, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, and we have to take the large t limit in order to get the ground state energy. Okay. So that's why I'm making, that explains why I chose some combination of plus or minus a. And in the end, we're going to have to choose all possible combinations. So there are four amplitudes we'll need to compute. Why that is, I'll delay it later, but for now I just chose one of those four a priori reasonable choices. Okay, so this is what we want to compute. And what we need to compute is the solution to the equation of motion, which is d squared x bar d tau squared plus b prime is 0, with the boundary conditions that x bar of plus or minus t over 2 is plus or minus a. And so this is just now a classical mechanics problem, essentially. And this equation of motion is essentially just the equation of motion for a particle moving within the potential minus v. So essentially what we want to do is flip potential over and solve equation of motion for a particle that starts at one of these maxima on the inverted potential and ends at the other one. And as you know from classical mechanics, often the easiest way to solve these problems is using conservation laws. So particle moving in a potential with no other forces acting on it has a conserved energy. So the energy here, just a half dx bar tau squared minus v. So we're working the classical mechanics problem with an extra minus sign here. So this energy is conserved. And there's a solution with, this is conserved. And there is a solution with zero energy with our boundary conditions. With that observation, we can solve a first order differential equation instead of a second order derivatives. So basically, we just need to solve the x bar, the tau is root 2v of x. And we don't know what v of x looks like. Everywhere, we do know that it locally looks like a parabola near a and minus a. And the second derivative is just omega squared assumption. I've also made the assumption that v at plus or minus a is 0. So when x is approximately a, or when tau goes to infinity, so the particle is going from minus a to a, so for large t, it should be very close to a. So tau is large. Then root 2v is just approximately, 2v of a, which is 0. Plus a minus x bar times v prime, which is also 0. So we just get the quadratic term, a minus x bar squared omega squared to the half. These terms are 0. And so this is just approximately a minus x bar omega. And the solution to this is just x bar is like e to the minus omega tau. Oh. So it the particle should be exponentially close. This is a minus x. Solution, the particle is exponentially close to a for large tau, like we would expect. And similarly, it's exponentially close to minus a for large negative tau. So we can sketch the solution to this equation of motion. So x bar versus tau should look something like this. This is a, this is minus a for, wait, for finite t. It looks something like this at t over 2, x bar is equal to a, and it's exponentially close for large t. And similarly, at t over minus t over 2. And somewhere in between, it should cross through 0. And so the solution should look something like this. And this is what's known as where the name instanton comes from, because the interesting behavior where the particle is away from the minima, it just occurs in some small localized region in Euclidean time. So this is localized in tau, which is where it gets the name instanton. Just some instant, it's something interesting is happening. And, well, so we're interested in taking the t goes to infinity limit. And so we figured out what was going on near the minima, or maxima, the inverted potential. And we argued that it has to cross through 0 at some point. If you cross through 0 at any point, at any time, call it tau 1, at least in the t goes to infinity limit. So in fact, this is actually there's a class of solutions in this limit, which differ just by the location of the center of the instanton. In other words, the time at which x bar is equal to 1. So there's a family of solutions. And so this solution is known as the instanton. If I made a different choice for boundary conditions and chose the initial position to be a and the final position to be minus a, that's just the time reverse of this. So there are also anti-instanton solutions, which is just the time reverse. OK. So what we're going to do next time is we're going to, we want to use the solutions we found to compute the ground state of energy splitting. So we'll do, and in order to do that, we need to compute the Euclidean action of these solutions. And also, we need to check that we have found all of the relevant solutions to Euclidean equations of motion with finite action. So we'll do both of those things next time. Are there any further questions?
Yeah. Why did you set e to 0? Is it just for convenience? Or?
So it turns out if we made another choice,
yeah,
in the at least in the infinite t, large t limit, we would end up with an infinite action solution.
Okay.
So these are the only solutions that have finite action.
Right,
okay. So the lecture notes have been posted for the first three lectures, and also the tutorial schedule has been updated. First tutorial is next week.
Next week?
Next week, not Friday.
Oh.